Welcome, brothers and sisters. This is Common and Uncommon with your host, Julio, where we take on a variety of different topics and talk about the popular and unpopular perspective on said topic, from community to national and international. Our goal is not to push one or the other perspective, but to explore both points of view and just engage in fun but thought-provoking conversations. Once again, welcome. Hey fam, welcome back to another episode of Common and Uncommon. Thanks for taking the time to tune in. Today we'll be talking about one of my favorite indigenous leaders that actually played a major role in my curiosity of Native studies. He is known for leading one of the biggest Native resistances of the late 19th century, truly someone that came from nothing and evolved into a massive impact of positive change for the working class. Although this legend is long gone, he left behind seeds of resistance that would grow and live on for many decades, up until the present day in many indigenous communities. I find his story really uplifting and inspiring, so it was just a matter of time when I'd make an episode or two on this real-life Robin Hood. Now, before I go on, I'd like to share the following quote to give you an idea of the resilience this man had. It's as follows: "It is better to die on your feet than to live a lifetime on your knees." This was said by Emiliano Zapata, and it is still used by many to this day. Now, on to the rest of the episode, fam. So, Emiliano Zapata Salazar was born in 1879 in a state called Ananecuelco in the state of Morelos, Mexico. The state of Morelos during this period was one of the most impoverished in Mexico. 3 years before Zapata was born, in 1876, a general by the name of Porfirio Diaz took up the presidential seat after many decades of unrest in the country following the Mexican independence from Spanish colonial rule. Porfirio Diaz's liberalism was a pragmatic political project that sought to modernize Mexico and to begin industrial development, but at the cost of large social sectors. Although really interesting, it is a very long story of how Porfirio got into power in the first place, but let's just say Porfirio wasn't what he claimed to be, as he went on to claim that he was against dictatorships and wanted a democracy-led government in Mexico and to lift Mexico out of poverty. But this came with a big price and on the backs of indigenous populations of Mexico. Without getting too much into details about the deals Porfirio made with the U.S. to help him become president of Mexico, basically, Porfirio reached out to the U.S. again and made promises that if they invested in Mexico, he would ensure that they would have monopolies secured, and any backlash from the public or field workers, Porfirio promised to quote-unquote handle them. This in turn created one of the most sustained economic growths in that century, but this economic boom mostly benefited the elites and the hacendados of Mexico, profiting off the backs of the indigenous working class. Porfirio could care less about communal land holdings. He trampled on the civil liberties in the name of modernizing Mexico, and any backlash or uprisings were dealt with aggressively, usually resulting in stripping of one's property, leading to impoverishment, or they would be shipped off to a rural area for hard work without any kind of pay. Kind of sounds like slavery to me, you know, but... And this is where Emiliano Zapata comes into the picture. As I said earlier, Zapata was born in Morelos, a newly added state to the United States of Mexico. And there were one of the poorest states in the nation that didn't have much going for it. And this is mostly due to many decades of fighting off invaders and constant unstable governing heads. For many generations, the people of Morelos relied heavily on communal land to get by and avoid starvation. But Porfirio and his economic policies made it easier for hacendados, which are basically landowners that originated in Spanish colonial rule. Now, these hacendados were mostly of Spanish descent, and their wealth was passed down from generations of Spanish colonial rule over the indigenous people. And Porfirio passed laws to make it easier for these hacendados to expand and take more land to exploit its resources for personal gain. Many of the native residents complained about the inhumane working conditions and the abuses that they went through, but Porfirio had no choice but to turn a blind eye or stomp down on any uprisings because he didn't want to upset those that helped him get into power in the first place. Porfirio basically gave these corrupt landowners a free card to let them do whatever it takes to keep their landholdings, even if that meant murdering workers that spoke up. And obviously, just as seen throughout many societies that were oppressed around the world, oppression could only last for so long until those oppressed stood up and fought back. This abuse of power is what led up to the Mexican Revolution, and the people turned to Zapata to lead it. Now, before I go on, I need to mention some things first, as this will come into play later in his role as a revolutionary. Now, Zapata grew up rather wealthy, and not as poor as most of the people in his state. And this was due to his dad being a very respected horse trainer. This helped him make ends meet and live relatively well. And I say well, not rich, when compared to an elite or hacendado. But Zapata lost both his parents when he was at the age of 17. We begin to see Zapata standing up for the working and poor class in the year of 1897 when he attended a land rights protest, which resulted in him being arrested and drafted into the Porfirio Army. 6 months later, he was discharged, and with many hacendados desperate for a horse trainer and Zapata's dad being deceased, many hacendados actually turned to Emiliano Zapata and offered really good money. Although this didn't make Zapata rich, it gave Zapata the ability to afford a better way of living. Zapata's name and recognition grew rapidly, and Zapata became very interested in politics in the early years of the 1900s. And from 1905 onward, he started to attend many village meetings about the growing problem of the hacendados coming in and taking land for easy self-profits. Now, at this point in time, Porfirio Diaz had been president for at least the past 30 years. When Porfirio first ran for president, he stressed about the importance of a democracy for the Mexican nation and that dictatorships was a thing of the past and had no place in Mexico. He promised over and over again that by 1910, he would step down and give the presidency to someone else that the people would choose. Now, Zapata was aware of this and took Porfirio up on it. The governor of Morelos had just passed away, and the elites of Morelos already had someone in mind to continue to support the further expansion of haciendas. But Zapata, with the help of many of his personal supporters, decided to have their own candidate run, a candidate who was for the working class. Now, Zapata knew that if Porfirio was true to his word about democracy, he would allow this to happen. And actually, to the surprise of many, Zapata and his supporters were actually able to gather the majority of the state's residents' support in order for the candidate to win. This honestly would have been an overall easy win, but the same guy that talked big about democracy was the same that clamped down on this election. He and his team of elites, when I say he, I mean Porfirio, and his team of elites rigged the election and ended up putting one of their own candidates in as Morelos' state governor. And to prove this corruption of power, the new puppet governor wasted no time in implementing high taxes on those that supported Zapata and his movement's candidate. Now, Zapata realized that Porfirio was not going to play fair, and so Zapata and his supporters decided to take things into their own hands. In the next coming year of 1910, a local hacendado decided to fence off his hacienda to a communal hillside. So, Zapata armed 80 men, and they all went over to that same hillside and tore down the fence. This made Zapata an outlaw in the eyes of the Mexican elite. After this act, Zapata and his supporters ran off and hid into the surrounding mountains, with no statements given. The majority of Mexico had no idea of this rigged election that just took place in Morelos. Otherwise, there most likely would have been several uprisings in many parts of Mexico at that very moment. But in 1910 was also election year for a new Mexican president, and a man by the name of Francisco Madero, a wealthy liberal candidate, ran and actually had the majority support behind him. But Porfirio wasn't having any of it, so he had Francisco arrested and declared himself as the winner of a new term as president, obviously going back on his promises. Now, many of Francisco Madero's supporters helped him escape prison, and after escaping prison, Francisco went up north to the U.S. to plan his comeback. With all this corruption and self-interest deals from Porfirio happening, the people in Mexico started to become more and more furious. In the next year, Francisco wrote the San Luis Potosí Plan, which was basically a document that basically stated how the election was rigged and how Porfirio was a dictator, and a call to arms to the Mexican people to overthrow this corrupt leadership. After releasing this plan, Francisco then moved back to Mexico and started to organize rebellion groups with the help of the one and only Pancho Villa. Pancho Villa was known for his great leadership roles in uprisings in northern Mexico. P.S. I'm also making a future episode on the revolutionary Pancho Villa. His story is really fascinating as well. But anyways, Zapata, although really despised Porfirio, he wasn't a big supporter of opposite candidate Francisco. And this is because Francisco's campaign policies weren't really different apart from Porfirio's policies, you know, basically reinstating democratic processes and modernizing Mexico. It didn't have much to offer in regard to land reform, which was one of the main political objectives of Zapata and his movement. Zapata was faced with either joining Francisco and Pancho Villa's revolutionary movement, or wait for another opportunity to make a move. And ultimately, Zapata decided to start uprisings in the south while Francisco and Pancho took hold of the northern parts of Mexico. With so many uprisings on the northern and southern states of Mexico, Porfirio Diaz decided to resign and flee on a boat to Europe, and he died in exile 4 years later. Now, with Porfirio out of the picture and Francisco having the majority's public support, he was now in a much easier position to win the presidential election. But Francisco, although not yet officially president, but rather acting as future president, asked all the revolutionaries to stand down, with the majority, if not all, refused to do so. Zapata had been backstabbed before and wasn't about to put his full trust in Francisco just because he wasn't Porfirio. He didn't believe it would be wise to end the rebellion until land reform was made and real change was seen for the poor and working class. So in the summer of June, both Zapata and Francisco met in Mexico City to find some middle common ground. Francisco didn't make any set promises, but Zapata left the meeting believing Francisco was more trustworthy than previously thought, and someone that they could make deals with. Now, at this time, a very ruthless general named Victoriano Huerta made multiple attacks in Morelos, specifically against revolutionaries. Zapata truly believed this was the fault of the interim president and thought that as soon as Francisco was officially elected president, he would put an end to any attacks on Zapata and his revolutionaries. But in the next year, on October 1911, Francisco won the presidency in a landslide, and one of the very first things he did was to send representatives over to Zapata and his supporters to start working on negotiations, but with the precondition that Zapata and his men surrendered and put their arms down. Now, obviously this angered Zapata and saw it as a betrayal, so he decided to break away from negotiations and fled with his supporters to the mountains once again to organize their next moves. One of Francisco's main political objectives was to reinstate democratic processes to encourage the people to decide freely their future and to invest and modernize Mexico. This sounded all nice on the surface, but it was mostly meaningless in the eyes of Zapata, and he was actually quoted saying the following: "Freedom of the press for those who cannot read, free election for those who do not know the candidates, proper legal for those who have anything to do with any attorney. All those democratic principles, all those great words that gave such joy to our fathers and grandfathers have lost their magic. The people continue to suffer from poverty and endless disappointment." It was land reform that was the most beneficial for the poor and working class of the nation, so Zapata, with the help of a school teacher, drafted a plan called the Plan of Ayala. Ayala was a town in Morelos. And basically, this plan denounced Francisco as a traitor to the people of Mexico because he wasn't keeping his campaign promises and was still continuing Porfirio Diaz's self-interest policies. Zapata states that all Mexicans should continue the revolution until land reform is completed. This plan states that the vast majority of Mexican citizens own little to no land, making it nearly impossible to move up in society. So, due to these facts, a plan for the way land redistribution would happen by taking any land that was seized by any hacendados and giving it back to the original owners, and as for the corrupt monopolies that exploited the people and land, they would have to give up 1/3 of property for individuals that didn't own any land. By this act, those people would then have a lot better chance to improve their life. Zapata declared that if any owners of these monopolies that opposed this plan will lose the remaining 2/3 of their properties. That's pretty based if you ask me. But the Plan of Ayala was so popular with the common people and had such a powerful impact that it caused many revolts and uprisings against Francisco Madero's presidency. But Francisco decided to fight back more aggressively by burning down towns and kidnapping family members of revolutionaries. And this in turn dramatically increased Zapata's recruits. Although Zapata, his army wasn't your typical army force in which They would pick up arms and fight when needed, but when not in combat, they would go back to farming and working the land. It was pretty much just common working class folk in Zapata's army, driven by a common cause. Now, Zapata, having a big army, was ready to head to Mexico City to confront and execute Francisco, but a coup was carried out by other rebel groups, forcing Francisco to give up and resign. He agreed to be escorted out of the city, and as soon as he was out of the city, he was shot point blank in the back of the head. With no president in place, General Victoriano Huerta, the same general that unleashed multiple brutal attacks against the revolutionaries, took up the presidential seat and invited Zapata and his force to join him, but this was for self-interest as he wanted to use Zapata and his forces to attack other rebels. Divide and conquer is basically what this general wanted to do, and obviously Zapata saw right through his proposal. This self-appointed president general didn't last very long. With so many rebellion groups on the rise and the majority of the Mexican population not being in favor of this general, they saw him as another Porfirio Diaz, just a power-hungry dictator. So he resigned and fled Mexico. Now, Zapata decided to march into Mexico City with about 25,000 soldiers, and then Pancho Villa and his army marched into Mexico City as well, meeting up with Zapata and his forces. Both these groups walked into National Palace, where the president usually resides, and started to negotiate between each other and agreed to help each other in meeting their political objectives. Now, for Zapata, it was land reform, and for Pancho Villa, it was to become a civilian president in the northern part of Mexico. Now, shortly after this, Zapata went back to Morelos and right away started to work on implementing land redistribution. So he began to expropriate the hacendados. Zapata's movement created small loan banks to help the villagers buy plots of land to farm and cultivate. This was a great way to show the rest of Mexico how land reform was not only a possibility, but in what ways it could be accomplished. But while Zapata was focused on implementing land reform for the people of Morelos, there was an underlying threat growing for both Zapata and Pancho Villa. And with Zapata occupied working on his policies, this new threat was a man named Venustiano Carranza. He was known as a constitutionalist, which was mainly an upper middle class of liberals that claimed to be in favor of a constitution that benefited Mexicans, although his policies weren't much different from the previous two presidents. Carranza had a big following of supporters and had organized an army of rebels, and with this army, he went to battle with Pancho Villa and accomplished his goal in weakening his forces to the point where they were no longer a threat. He then shifted his focus to Zapata and went full force into Morelos and attacked many villagers and villages and killed many of the people there. But instead of running into the mountains again and planning next moves, Zapata decided to fight Carranza's forces head on. This led to a lot of bloodshed and many lives lost. Then, in retaliation, a group of Zapatistas bombed two passenger trains going into Mexico City, believing these trains had reinforcements and resupply cargo for Carranza forces. The result was 400 people dead, and this action actually made Zapata look bad in the rest of Mexico, and his overall public support began to fall, because it was actually not cargo, it was actually just civilians, so it was a mistake. Then, to make things worse, in 1917, Carranza drafted a new constitution that basically tore apart the plan of Ayala and its priority of land reform, and instead opened the doors for privatization of communal lands, allowing big corporations to come to Mexico and profit from the land's resources, pretty much what Porfirio had in place when he was president. Although Zapata's support had been tarnished, he still held a lot of support from his home state of Morelos. He had a very loyal following. So Carranza knew that no matter how much he tried to destroy Zapata's public image or his forces, Zapata would still have the support of the people of Morelos. So he knew that the only other option to neutralize the Zapata threat to power would be to get rid of Zapata entirely. So in 1919, a federal forces general named Jesus Guayardo that was fighting in Morelos turned on his own forces and ended up killing 59 of his own troops. Zapata received this news and believed Carranza's own forces were against him, so Zapata requested a meeting with this general to see if he would agree to an alliance to both take down Carranza. This federal general agreed and told Zapata to hold this meeting in a remote area. So on April 10, 1919, Zapata and 10 armed men traveled to the remote area agreed on, and as soon as he got there, multiple groups of federal forces came out from hiding and opened fire on Zapata and his men, resulting in their death. Zapata and his men didn't have a chance to even fight back. Now, almost a year later, Carranza himself was assassinated by his own general. Later on, that same general was then murdered as well. Goddamn. Then, the only remaining leader of the revolution was Pancho Villa. He was also assassinated in an ambush. As you can see, the Mexican Revolution was ruthless, but it was bound to happen. The question was by who and what forces it would have to be led by. Now, before the revolution, land rights and reform was seen as just an outlandish idea of the peasants. And Zapata took that and made it into a reality and something that the majority of Mexico's population agreed to. Even though Zapata was gone, his legacy would live on for many years, and his spirit carried in the hearts of the people that continued the fight. Zapata's influence reached many, if not all, revolutions in South America by the poor and working class against the elites. And in ending notes, I want to mention that Zapata was far from a perfect leader, but he did more positive for those that were exploited and looked down on, someone that had no fear in standing up for the poor and working class against the corrupted powers that ruled Mexico at the time. A real-life Robin Hood, honestly. Truly a man of the people. Now, to wrap up this episode, I like to end off with one of my favorite quotes of Zapata from one of his last given speeches to his followers. It's as follows. "I want to die a slave to principles, not to men." Emiliano Zapata, 1917-1918. Que viva la revolución y viva Zapata. Thanks so much for tuning in, fam. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll see you in the next episode. Peace, fam.